VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump vows to act with urgent resolve in response to two shootings over a 13-hour period this weekend, one in El Paso, Texas, and a second in Dayton, Ohio, and all 31 people have died as a result of that violence. In his comments from the White House Monday, he said he is taking action to make sure those who commit hate crimes face the death penalty.
I'm also directing the Department of Justice to propose legislation ensuring that those who commit hate crimes and mass murders face the death penalty, and that this capital punishment be delivered quickly, decisively, and without years of needless delay.
El Paso Mayor DeMarco held a news briefing Monday. He called the shooting in this city an act of domestic terrorism.
This was an act of domestic terrorism fueled by hate. An evil individual. I will not assist in promoting or emboldening his agenda, nor any movement that he would be associated with.
There was also praise for the people of El Paso.
I could not be more proud of our city, from the offers for free funeral services, to the lines to donate blood, to the overwhelming crowd at vigils throughout the city. El Paso has shown that we are much stronger than Saturday's attack.
A mass transit strike in Hong Kong Monday turned violent, with protesters erecting street blockades, occupying tunnels, and attacking police stations. Police responded with tear gas and rubber bullets. They made dozens of arrests. Protesters are calling for the resignation of Hong Kong's pro-Beijing chief executive, Carrie Lam. Lam says she is not going to step down, nor will she agree to an investigation of police brutality against the protesters. This is VOA News. North Korea launched a fresh round of projectiles early Tuesday. That's according to South Korea. The launches came as North Korea's foreign ministry released a statement slamming joint U.S.-South Korean military drills. It warned Pyongyang may abandon nuclear talks. The Belfast shipyard that built the Titanic is struggling despite efforts to replace old industry with a new. AP correspondent Charles D. Ledesma.
Harland & Wolff risks going into bankruptcy after its Norwegian parent company failed to find a buyer. Workers hope Britain will step in to rescue the company, but so far the government has declined to intervene. The shipyard is famed for constructing the doomed Titanic, which sank on its maiden transatlantic voyage in 1914. The firm, which once boasted a workforce of 30,000 but now employs only 125, was a key industrial producer during World War II, and in recent years has diversified to work on cruise liner retrofits and wind energy projects. Charles de Ledesma, London.
Britain is joining the United States in a naval security mission to protect shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has seized three foreign ships in the waterway, through which more than a fifth of the world's oil supply travels. One of those vessels is British flagged. Pentagon said it welcomes British participation in the patrols. The U.S. labels China a currency manipulator. AP correspondent Mike Rossi explains why.
The trade war between the United States and China is heating up, with China devaluing its currency Monday, leading to major losses on U.S. financial markets, and the U.S. retaliating late Monday by placing China on its currency blacklist. In labeling China a currency manipulator, the U.S. Treasury Department released a statement saying it will work with the International Monetary Fund to eliminate the unfair competitive advantage created by China's latest action. The move by China's central bank to devalue its yuan was an apparent response to President Donald Trump's threat last week to impose new tariffs on $300 billion in Chinese imports as of September 1st. Mike Gracia, Washington.
UN investigators are calling for an embargo on arms sales to Myanmar because of human rights abuses. They're also calling for targeted sanctions on companies linked to the military. The investigators Monday said the businesses could be complicit in international crimes. The United States, I should say the United Nations, has accused Myanmar's military of carrying out a campaign against the Rohingya minority with genocidal intent, driving more than 700,000 Rohingya into neighboring Bangladesh. Myanmar's military did not immediately comment on the report. It has previously denied abuses against the Rohingya and said its actions were a legitimate response to attacks on the insurgents. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 6th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Sierra Leone's president orders a temporary freeze on foreign travel for all government officials.
During the campaign, we noted and we articulated the fact that overseas travel was a major drain on government budget. So President Bill Habu promised to run an efficient management of the state and our resources needs to plug that hole.
Mohamed Rachman Suare, Sierra Leone's information minister, opposition parties and activists in Malawi will hold another round of protests today to demand the resignation of the Elections Commission chair. President Mnangagwa briefs Zimbabweans on the health of 95-year-old former President Robert Mugabe. And Cameroonians march to demand to know the whereabouts of their relatives following a prison outbreak.
We simply want the government to let us know where they are now. We do not have any bad intentions, and it is our right to know where they are.
Julius Berka, one of the protesters yesterday in Yaounde, a spokesman defends the security record of Nigerian President Buhari. And this morning, we'll discuss the status of female journalists in Liberia with a Mandela Washington Fellow. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio late Monday ordered a temporary freeze on foreign travel for all government officials. Information Minister Mohamed Rachman Suare says foreign travel has been a major drain on the country's budget, and President Bio is simply fulfilling a campaign promise to rein in government expenditure.
The only trips allowed at the moment will be statutory trips, and even those will need to be cleared by His Excellency the President. This did not come as a surprise to many of us who followed the campaign trail. During the campaign, we noted and we articulated the fact that overseas travel was a major drain on government budget. So President Bill Habu promised to run an effective and efficient management of the state and our resources needs to plug that hole, because many might want to go under the radar. So he now wants to ensure that that leakage is also blocked.
What do you say to critics who say this is naive and that foreign travels are part of the government functionaries to help the government function effectively?
Well, it's very, very clear that many will be tempted to abuse overseas travel opportunities if there are no stringent and rigorous mechanisms in place to checkmate those opportunities. This is what this directive seeks to achieve. In the past, we have also argued that since we are a respected member of the International Committee of Nations with ambassadors, high commissions around the world, some of these meetings could best be attended by designated diplomatic staff in those countries rather than ministers and public servants traveling at cost to government to those trips. So this is putting into effect His Excellency's avowed commitment to ensure an efficient management of the state and our resources.
Some of the critics are saying that this is just a mere publicity stunt, since the government might not be able to achieve anything significant in what it is telling Sierra Leoneans.
Well, I mean, out here, as long as you don't do their bidding, they will always have alternative views. But I like to assure you this. In coming months, in coming weeks or so, we will be sharing with Sierra Leoneans the substantial savings we would have done from this temporary freeze on overseas travel. It's going to be very beneficial to Sierra Leoneans, and whatever savings we do will go towards addressing proper challenges on the ground. This is very important for us as a government.
What is the anticipated period within which this temporary freeze is supposed to last?
Well, I cannot say where I stand from now, but I'm sure it would last for as long as necessary. And the important point is this is not a standalone measure. This is part of a cocktail of measures to ensure that fiscal discipline, effective and efficient management of the state and resources are cornerstones of President Bill's administration.
Mohamed Rachman Suare, Sierra Leone's information minister. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital of Freetown. Hundreds of people have marched in Cameroon's capital, Yaounde, demanding to know the whereabouts of imprisoned relatives who were moved to unknown locations last week following a riot inside a large prison in Yaounde. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more on this story from Yaounde.
32-year-old Julius Berka was among the marchers in Yaounde on Monday, demanding the government reveal where the missing prisoners have been taken.
We simply want the government to let us know where they are now. We do not have any bad intentions, and it is our right to know where they are.
The prisoners were moved after a riot in the Kondinge Central Prison on July 22, detained separatists from Cameroon's English-speaking regions and jailed opposition members took possession of the prison yard to denounce overcrowding, deplorable conditions and lengthy trial delays. The prison, built for 750 inmates, was holding more than 6,000. The government says that after the riot, about 250 prisoners were moved. Separatists on social media had asked the government to, within 5 days, as from last Wednesday, tell them where the detainees were or face the consequences. On Monday, they said they had been informed that 88 of the English-speaking inmates were in a cell in Yaoundé. They said they did not know where the others were. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says the inmates were taken out of the Kondinge prison because of the role they played in the riot, in which part of the facility was torched and many inmates injured.
The inmates identified as being the leaders of this insurgency, 177 people on the day of the event and 67 thereafter, for a total of 244 insurgents, have been handed over to the police and gendarmerie services for questioning. They have all been heard now and various investigations almost completed.
Sadi said some of the inmates were in more secured detention facilities in Yaoundé, while others were moved elsewhere to make the prison less congested. Denis Nkemlemo, spokesperson for the main opposition political party, the Social Democratic Front, says by keeping the prisoners beyond the reach of family members and friends, the government is aggravating the crisis in the English-speaking regions. Armed groups in the two regions have fought to separate them from majority French-speaking Cameroon since 2017. Rights group Amnesty International has called on authorities to improve the grim prison conditions, release anyone detained only for peaceful protest, and ensure that every person held past the legal period of pre-trial detention goes before a judge immediately or is released. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Opposition parties and activists in Malawi will hold yet another round of protests today to demand the resignation of Elections Commission Chair Jean Ansah for her alleged mismanagement of the May 21st election in which President Peter Mutharika won a second term. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Viva Malawi, viva!
The 2 days of protests started Thursday and follow other nationwide demonstrations on June 20, calling for the resignation of Ansah and the entire Malawi Electoral Commission, or MEC. In the capital, Lilongwe, this week, former President Saulos Chilima, leader of the United Transformation Movement, joined the protests.
We are continuing from where we left last time. I am here as a Malawian to join fellow Malawians in seeking justice. We would like Justice Jean Ansah to leave office because, as everybody is aware, the elections didn't go well and we are not happy at all.
Lazarus Chakwera, leader of the opposition Malawi Congress Party, also took part in the demonstrations. The MEC declared that Mutharika won re-election with 39% of the vote. Chakwera was second with 35%, followed by Chilima with 20%. Chakwera and Chilima are challenging the election results in court, alleging ballot stuffing and the use of Tippex correction fluid to change votes. This week's protests were marred by violent scenes. In Lilongwe and the northern city of Nzuzu, the protesters looted private shops and burned government offices. In the commercial capital, Blantyre, there were clashes between the protesters and the members of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party trying to protect the party's offices. The confrontations forced the government to deploy the military to bring order. Mark Bodoman, is the government spokesperson.
It's really unfortunate that they are disturbing the businesses of people, lives of people, and this cannot go unchecked. And obviously, anyone who is found touching offices or breaking shops and the like, they will be apprehended.
Timothy Ntambo is the chairperson for the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, organizers of the protest. He says those who perpetrated violence were not part of the demonstrators, but hooligans who took advantage of the peaceful protests.
We condemn that in strongest terms possible, and we disown those people, because the demonstrations that we have are peaceful demonstrations. We called for peaceful demonstrations.
Ansa, who maintains her innocence, told the local radio last week that she will resign only if court rules that the elections were fraudulent. A hearing on the election dispute case is expected to begin July 29. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, August 6th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa Monday informed the country that 95-year-old former President Robert Mugabe, who has been hospitalized since April this year in Singapore, is responding well to treatment. But Mr. Mnangagwa says the former president's doctors have advised that he be kept under observation for much longer. Earlier this month, Mr. Mugabe's family released a photo of him with his wife and elder son, showing the former president not too well. Tabang Nari is a Zimbabwean who works with civil society groups inside Zimbabwe. He says while there is still a glimmer of hope, at the same time, President Mnangagwa could be preparing the nation for any eventuality.
We received a statement from Harare President Mnangagwa saying that former President Robert Mugabe has been detained, in his words, that is, at a hospital in Singapore since April. So in summary, he said the doctors have been working with him. There's a government delegation that went to see him. They feel that he's making some recovery, and hopefully President Mugabe will be returning to Zimbabwe.
Let's make sure that people know that the former president is about, what, 94 years old? So,
yes.
But at the same time, this is about the longest time he's been away. Is that correct?
Yes, it is the longest time that he's been away. And in the press statement, again, current President Mnangagwa says he is looking good for his age. There is a glimmer of hope, but at the same time, I think it could be some way of preparing the nation for any eventuality.
Because when President Mnangagwa says that the team that visited the former president reported that he is responding well to treatment and that he could be released fairly soon, I think that exactly so. Maybe this is a way of, what, as you said, preparing the nation for what is to come.
Yes, I think we need to be honest with ourselves that Mr. Mugabe has lived a long life. And most of his life, he was in power, he was working. And recently, as in November 2017, that's when, through the coup, he was made to retire. And even before President Mnangagwa released the press statement, his own family had released photos. One of the photos where he is seen with his eldest son. And even from the photo, you could see that the old man is not as well as he used to be. People believe in miracles, but we all must accept that at one time, you know, the body starts failing, the body is old. So I think it's a time for people to think about his legacy, what he did for Zimbabwe. Regrettably, people are saying that he has access to this treatment overseas, but Zimbabweans back at home do not have access to treatment at home.
Exactly. I think I was going to say something like that, because it seems that almost every official who has gotten sick in Zimbabwe either has gone to South Africa or somewhere in Asia. Again, this brings into question the public health services in Zimbabwe.
Yes, it's a sad, sad state of the public health system in Zimbabwe, where if someone has been a president for 40 years, you know, we have a medical school in Harare, and there is no local hospital that can take care of the president, and the president has to fly halfway around the world. And, you know, Zimbabweans are some of the best medical professionals, so there is no reason why our president should not be getting that help back home. but it's because of the state of the economy. We haven't invested in our institution, and it has come back to haunt us.
Taban, thank you very much again. Always nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Absolute pleasure, James. Thank you.
Taban Nari is a Zimbabwean who works with civil society groups inside Zimbabwe. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Dallas in Texas. A spokesperson for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says the administration has implemented new security measures to ensure the safety of all school children. Garba Shehu's remarks came after critics say the government has failed in its core mandate to protect life and property. The comments also came after a book by former CNN anchor Aisha Cisse titled Beneath the Tamarind Tree said the government appears not to know who to negotiate with for the release of the rest of the abducted Chibok schoolgirls. Shehu says the book misrepresented the government's efforts to locate and free the kidnapped girls, although he welcomes the move to ensure the schoolgirls are not forgotten.
We thought the book he wrote is a good idea because we needed the world to keep in mind the stolen girls of Chibok and generally the problems of girl-child education, not only in Nigeria, but in Africa. But I think that in presenting the facts in the book, she had overspoken on many of the matters. And I think that her facts were very inaccurate in many respects. It would have been very uncharitable for anyone to accuse the sitting Buhari administration of lacking interest in the protection or securing the freedom of the girls that were stolen. When this administration came into office, we inherited this unwanted situation where 270 of the girls had been stolen. As we speak, more than half are back, and we are still working on getting back the remainder.
So is there any policy direction from the government in addressing some of these problems with the abduction of these girls?
Well, you know, there is what is called the Safe Schools Project that has been inaugurated in Nigeria with the keen support of the United Nations. We have a scheme going on that is fortifying the security around all of girls' schools across particularly those areas that are vulnerable to this kind of activity. High walls are being raised around schools, and police guard is being supplied to all girls' schools, particularly in the northeastern parts of the country.
In connection to that, some of the government critics and opposition parties have said that what they regard as the growing insecurity in the country dovetails into this book that says the government has failed the people of Nigeria in its core mandate to protect life and property because of recent surge in what they describe as kidnappings for ransom, among other militant activities.
I agree that there has been a recent surge, but people who are watching the developments minute by minute in the country must also appreciate the fact that there is a climb down now. Much of what the people are talking about belongs to the past. Farmers' habits like clashes have been drastically curtailed. Banditry and kidnapping in places like Kaduna, Zamfara State have gone down drastically. But we understand people stay, they are stuck to old perceptions. And it is for understandable reasons, because there is also a media hype in the country promoting this lack of security. The thing is that this administration has fought corruption and has put corruption on the front burner.
Garba Shehu is the spokesperson for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Joining us this morning in our Washington studio is Mandela Washington Fellow Sunny Christian Lawrence of Liberia. She will discuss the state of female journalists in Liberia. But first, Ms. Lawrence discusses her radio show where she provides information to young people about career choices.
I'm running a radio program called Career Talk. Career Talk is a 45-minute radio program that informs our listening audience about issues that are affecting young people, especially as it relates to careers. In Liberia, we don't have like career counselors in schools, and many high schools don't even have center for young people to decide on what career path to choose and why. So growing up and graduating from high school, I was in a dilemma. You know, I didn't know what really to do, who to talk to. And I felt that besides me, there are lots of other people, other young people that are facing the similar problem. So I decided to host this career radio show weekly. I invite professors from different colleges, different backgrounds, different areas of expertise to talk about what they do so that young people can be informed about career opportunities and choices that they can choose based on their passion and based on their interests.
It's always nice to have a female journalist, especially from Liberia.
Okay.
Because it seems to me female journalists are scarce. So I'd like for you to talk to me about female journalists and the state of female journalism in Liberia.
Okay, thank you so much for that question. Because like you rightly said, female journalists are really scarce. And it's because many people feel that journalism is a position that is for male. And lots of females feel that they cannot do it. They cannot go out there, look for stories, report the fact, and be able to give out to the public. And the reason is, somehow I would say the society that we live in, they aren't like creating opportunities for females to participate in journalism. I would say it that way. Also, another point could be the fact that in Liberia, let me put it this way, journalists are unpaid. So lots of females will not want to go into a field wherein they will not make money to sustain themselves and their families. But as time progressed, as for me, I actually chose journalism based on my passion.
So if you were to advise, say, some female who does not know what career path to take, what would you tell them about journalism, whether they can go into journalism or not to go into journalism?
I believe in women empowerment. So during my career talk, I strongly encourage female to go into journalism, especially if they have the passion for it, because it's a sacrificial job in Liberia. Just imagine working from week to week and not getting, you know, the support and the financial benefits that you need to sustain yourself. So it's something that you must have the passion. Encourage ladies to go into the field if they're passionate, because if you go in there because of financial gain, I will tell you, you go into the wrong place. So I always say that follow your passion, follow what is it that you're interested in, and make the change that you want to see in the world.
Sunny, I feel like you can counsel me. Thank you very much again for joining us on Daybreak Africa. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you ever so much for having me. And thank you to Voice of America for giving me this chance to share my experience about the Mandela program and what I do back home.
That was Mandela Washington Fellow and Liberian journalist Sunny Christian Lawrence. She was speaking with us here in our Washington studio. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Tanzania's government on Monday charged investigative journalist Eric Habendera with money laundering, tax evasion, and assisting in a criminal racket. Habendera has been in custody since July 29th. Suspect charged with money laundering are not eligible for bail, so news reports say he could remain in jail until his case is resolved, which could take 3 years. Habendera's alleged violations occurred between early 2015 and last month. His next court date is August 19. The freelance journalist has been critical of President John Magufuli's administration and the ruling Chama Cha Mapinduzi Party in stories for The Guardian, The East African, and The Times of London. That's it for this Tuesday, August 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. deny your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.